Hello, you're listening to Bike Snob on WBAI. I'm Eben Weiss. Last Monday, M. Samolowicz was riding on 3rd Avenue in Sunset Park, Brooklyn, when a driver doored her. She crashed, and the driver of a tractor trailer killed her. This was the 18th cycling death in New York City this year, which means we're on pace to double 2018's cycling death toll of 10 well before the end of the year. The week before this latest death, Mayor de Blasio had announced the Green Wave, the $58 million plan to reverse the alarming spike in cycling deaths. Pedestrian deaths are also on the rise, by the way. I believe we're at something like 59 deaths this year versus 55 at the same time last year. This past Saturday in Jamaica, Queens, a motorist trying to beat a light drove onto the sidewalk and hit 3 people who fortunately survived. We know who's causing all the mayhem out there, and we know who's getting hurt. Drivers are hitting cyclists, drivers are hitting pedestrians, and of course, drivers are also hitting each other. Most bike advocates feel the city isn't doing enough with the Green Wave. Yet, certain local media outlets like to push this narrative that it's cyclists who are out of control. Moreover, they also like to push this idea that cyclists all belong to the same rarefied demographic. Steve Quatso of The Post was on Twitter a few days ago pushing his asinine opinion piece from last year, quote, New York City should stop coddling young white bros on bikes. How a woman getting doored to death is an indication that the city is coddling young white bros is beyond me, but there you go. The Post also recently ran another opinion piece from another local go-to bike hater, Gary Taustein, who called riding bikes in New York City, quote, the unpopular hobby of a few hundred thousand gentry elites. I don't know what a gentry elite is. Usually it's one or the other. Okay, here's how many people are riding bikes in New York City, according to the DOT's Cycling in the City report. 24% of adult New Yorkers ride a bike at least once a year. That's 1.6 million people. Of those, 53%, or nearly 800,000 people, ride a bike at least several times a month. On a typical day, there are nearly 500,000 cycling trips happening in New York City. Now, there is a gender gap. Looking at bike commuters, the gender gap is roughly, it's a 70-30 men to women ratio. However, the rate of female cycling is increasing by over 9% a year, whereas the rate of male cycling is increasing by about 4% a year. So the gender gap is closing, and it's probably due to better infrastructure that makes cycling a more inviting proposition. So the fact is that infrastructure that quote-unquote coddles white bros really makes cycling more accessible to everybody else. Okay, so I hate to even mention either of those writers because they're singularly unqualified to write anything about bike policy. Quatso is a restaurant reviewer or something. Taustein is nothing. Still, it's very telling that people like this and publications like The Post and people who want to undermine the efforts to create better cycling and safer streets love to go to this notion that bikes are just for, quote, gentry elites and not something that benefits all New Yorkers. There's also, of course, a total disregard for the fact that creating more bike infrastructure makes the streets safer for all users, whether they're riding or not. Now, we're going to be taking calls today. The number is 212-209-2877. But in light of what I've just said, the fact is there are lots of advocates out there looking to advance the complementary causes of cycling and safety. Then they're doing a huge amount of work out there to fill in these huge gaps between what the city is doing to promote cycling, to send out the message to make the streets safer, and what you're hearing and what you're getting. As someone, speaking for myself, who just talks about bikes on the radio and writes about bikes. I wanted to talk to somebody who's out there every day interacting with people one-on-one as a bike advocate and working to make this happen, working to get cycling out there in New York City. And all of this brings me to today's guest, Courtney Williams, also known as the Brown Bike Girl. From the Brown Bike Girl website, this is what Courtney Williams does. Quoting from the website, the Brown Bike Girl partners with local government, nonprofits, and institutions to increase bicycling access and adoption within communities of color and bicycling education for all. A legacy of disenfranchisement through public and private policy has resulted in people of color participating in many aspects of society at lesser rates than their white peers. Yet communities of color stand to gain the most benefits from cycling, from economic empowerment to health, mobility equity, and the simple joy that a bicycle ride can put into everyday life. Thank you very much, Courtney, for being on the show.
Thank you.
All right. Now, first, Courtney, just tell I've read from your website, but tell our listeners more about what you're doing out there.
So I created the concept of bicycle advocacy consulting. And what that means is I'm the consultant to the advocates. There's lots of organizations that already specialize in bicycling, or there's individuals who want to be better, like nonprofits who already are great at community organizing but don't know bicycling. So I'm there to fill in the gaps with strategy for engagement, essentially. And it's fortunate that as a consultant, I am also a I'm not going to say talented. I'm well-versed.
Talented and well-versed.
Thank you. I'm well-versed in cycling. I've been in the city for 10 years. I've been riding 9 of those 10 years, and I have ridden with almost all types of bike groups in the city. I am a certified teacher for United States. So there's the League of American Bicyclists. I'm certified with them as a teacher. And I just care about people and how they learn, make sure that they learn and that they can protect themselves on the streets. So I go to these organizations, or the organizations come to me and they're like, we want to do a thing. And I say, that's great. This is how we're going to make sure that you are including people of color in your outreach, or you're going to do it better, or people are not going to be forgotten. They're definitely going to be included. So that's what I do.
So you mentioned doing education.
Yes.
Now, I get a fair number of callers who will say one of the things that needs to happen out there, and it's true and it's also a little bit blamey, but you get people calling in who say cyclists need to be better educated. They need to learn the rules of the road, blah, 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 blah. However, absolutely.
Yeah.
Riding a bike is something you sort of pick up on your own and you figure it out as you go along. Mm-hmm. So tell me and our listeners how you approach education.
Everybody needs education about being a road user, period. Yeah. If you're on the street, you need to know how the street is laid out. You need to know how to operate your vehicle, be it car, truck, or bicycle, in a safe way. You need to know how to navigate and how to plan ahead, right? Defensive driving applies to bicycles just as much as it applies to cars. The things that I can't teach people, unfortunately, are the morals to give a flying woohoo about other human beings. Yes. And to regard whether a person is on a bike as equally as important as if they're in a car. But yes, I do believe everybody needs to have education. Everybody has to be responsible. But to the people who always come back to essentially what she said, victim blaming, they're just throwing something out to shut people down. It's sort of like Black Lives Matter, All Lives Matter. Nobody said All Lives Matter until Black Lives Matter.
Right.
The same way that you don't say you need bike education until you feel that bikes are a nuisance, right? If you needed education, you needed it from the beginning. And why aren't we, you know, the DMV and whomever else, making sure that bicyclists are getting that from the jump?
Yes.
Yes.
All right. So the number to call is 212-209-2877. We're talking to bike advocate Courtney Williams, the Brown Bike Girl. We have some calls. WBAI, you're on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Yeah, hello. Hold on. on. I gotta lower my music.
Okay.
Okay. So, yeah, I'm not a bike rider in New York because I feel it's too dangerous. And I've tried with my husband because he's a major bike rider.
Okay.
And I tried renting those horrible blue bikes. But to make a long story short, I will only ride in lane and follow that, you know, that kind of stuff. But I want to go back about, I want to bring this story about a biker. I'm a driver. I drive a car as well. I live in Carroll Gardens right by the Commons. Anyway, I'm a community person, been here my whole life. I'm 58 years old. I was driving down Bergen Street, where you have that beautiful bike lane. And this person was directly in the middle of my car driving his bike. And what I said to him was, you have a bike lane. Get in your bike lane. He was holding me up from driving properly, okay?
Okay.
That's where I had to go. Okay. Anyway, so he, when we get to a red light, I stop. Do you know what he did?
He went, let me guess.
Bike.
Yeah.
What?
No, go
he
ahead.
He off his bike and kicked my mirror in of my car.
Okay.
I put that bike, my car, in park. And I got out of my car, but he took off. All of a sudden, the girl he was riding with, I pulled her off her bike, and I wanted his information. But she just got away from me.
This,
okay? Now, that is disgusting.
All right. Now, this is
a... I honk my horn to tell bikers I'm here.
Ah, okay. There it is.
You have to do
okay,
that.
All right. No, there it is. I appreciate
you
this.
You have to do that.
Okay,
you
just...
these bikers that are...
Okay, so I need to speak, and what I'd like to say is I knew as you were telling this story, I'm going to let Courtney comment as well. I knew when I heard this story that there was a piece missing. The first thing I'd like to say before we address this very dramatic confrontation.
Very dramatic.
I'd first like to say I really, really loved what you said in the beginning about how you've tried to ride a bike. You'll only ride in bike lanes, and that you've found the experience of riding too frustrating. And what we really need to do in this city, in my opinion, Courtney may agree with me, is that if we create an environment where people like you can feel safe at all times riding, we'll have more people riding. Would you agree, Courtney?
Absolutely. If there were more protected bike lanes that were seriously protected by something that a car cannot roll over and into, more people would be definitely on bikes.
Right, which brings me to your confrontation. Now, firstly, as a driver, it may be very difficult for you to discern why a person is not riding a bicycle in the bike lane. Courtney, this is the first part. What reasons might there be that a motorist might not be aware of that a cyclist is not using the bike lane?
So cyclists are supposed to use bike lanes wherever bike lanes are present. However, if a bike lane is unusable, then that cyclist has the right to come out of the bike lane. And unusable means reasonably unsafe. So what you might not see, the obvious thing that you can see is a double parked car. Double parked cars or cars that are parked not completely double, but enough to make it not safe to pass by it. Directly, like it's going to touch your arm. But what you might not see is glass. What you might not see is some weird placement of a pothole, a grate, anything like that. So cyclists have the absolute right to come out of the bike lane. They're supposed to return to the bike lane once they perceive it safe. So yeah, don't automatically assume that they're just doing the wrong thing.
Okay. I still knew I was missing a piece of the puzzle. So here you are driving down Bergen Street. There's a bicyclist in front of you. Next thing you know, you're at a red light and the cyclist is attacking you. There had to be a missing piece, and I was gonna sort of ask some follow-up questions there. But before I did that, you volunteered that you were driving and a bicyclist was in front of you, so you were honking at them. You used your horn. Now, Courtney,
yes.
how do you feel about being honked at, whether in warning, whether impatient? Is it even possible to tell the difference between a warning honk, an impatience honk, a get the hell out of my way honk?
I'm a highly perceptive person, so I can usually discern it, but it's usually indiscernible. Your horn doesn't have inflection, you know, like a voice does.
Yes.
So you're just honking and making noise. And the cyclist is like, hey, I'm trying to do something. I'm going to get back over. Like, chill out. So no, we don't know why you're honking. People honk to be courteous sometimes, but it's just a distraction and confusing. Most of the horns are angry horns. So
and it can feel like a threat, right?
It feels threatening, but also it is just sound and not actual physical touching or violence. So I definitely don't condone that cyclist kicking in anybody's property.
No.
But also, to the caller, she has no right to touch another human being, no matter how she feels, because that is assault.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So, you know, I think I would put this down to an incident. You know, there may have been overreactions on the part of the cyclist or on both sides, but there really is a communication problem. And the horn as a means of communication is not a nuanced one.
No.
And to communicate with your car, with other road users, be they pedestrians and cyclists, there's going to be a huge amount lost in the translation. So what may feel like to you, excuse me, please, I'm trying to drive, may very well feel like harassment. Yeah. And maybe this guy was, you know, being overly macho and thought he was protecting his girlfriend or something from the big bad driver. I don't know, but I think that's what's going on there. We're going to take some more calls. Before we do, I would just like to remind you that WBAI is fundraising right now. We need to keep programs like Bike Snob and all the other great programs you listen to on the air. And the way we do that is support from listeners like you. You can pledge your support by going to the WBAI website, WBAI.org, and becoming a BAI buddy. You can do that for $10 a month. If you become, you can support any show you want, any show you listen to and love on this station. If you want to support Bike Snob, my mission here is to just bring all these cycling issues to all New Yorkers so we all know what's going on. You can become a Bike Snob supporter. I will send you a signed copy of my latest book if you do that. So please become a WBAI supporter. If you don't like the internet, if you don't like the cookies, if you don't like all of that stuff, you can do it the old-fashioned way. Call up, pick up your phone, call 516-620-3602. Again, 516-620-3602. Support Bike Snob, support WBAI, support all of this programming. And we're talking to Courtney Williams, bicycle advocate, the brown bike girl. The studio line is 212-209-2877. Please call in. We're talking about bicycle advocacy. We're talking about what advocates are doing out there to bring cycling to more people. WBAI, you're on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from? Oh, okay. 212. The number is 212-209-2877. Hello, WBAI. You're on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hi, my name is Rosie. I'm calling from New York.
Hi.
Yeah, I'm calling to talk about the situation about cyclists sharing the lane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you turn your, just before we begin, can you turn your radio down a little bit? We're having a little bit of a delay.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, my problem is I don't think it is the cyclists that are the main problems when it comes to sharing lanes. It's just the drivers, they are so used to constantly rushing through traffic and, you know, they are the reason why we have those sort of problems. The cyclists, usually they are very scared to share the lane, and they are very aware of the danger that they might face, so they're always cautious. But just the drivers, they feel safe in their car, and they rush through traffic, they honk, they scream, and, you know, things like that, you know, happen.
Absolutely. Yeah. So what's your, Courtney, what's your take on that?
I think that absolutely correct, Rosie. Everybody in the city needs to calm down. I know that's a big ask of New Yorkers, but the objective is to get there alive and get there safe. And I've never really been, I hate buzzwords so much, but as of late, like I've begun to identify with the concept of car culture, which is cars have the right to move first, fastest, without consequence. And that's just absolutely wrong in a city where we know that we have multiple modes of transportation happening. And so people need to be willing to slow down and allow the other smaller, more vulnerable modes of transportation to get where they have to go. Because, I really wish I had like a physics lab to do some kind of study just to show drivers, like, you can gun past the cyclist going 1,000,000 miles an hour. You're going to stop again in like 2 seconds. No matter how long a cyclist slows you down, your car has 100 horsepower at the very least. You will make it up in 2 seconds. So no matter how frustrated you feel, it's really just about you kind of wanting to win a competition that doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Exactly. So are you?
Oh, can I say something? And I'm also a taxi driver.
Oh, okay. Yeah, please.
So when you hear from a taxi driver saying that we are the problem, then believe us, we are the problem.
You're the
problem. We have a problem with
thank
buses.
You for owning
we have
that.
A problem with cyclists.
Yeah. So what kind of taxi do you drive? You drive a yellow taxi? You drive a TLC car?
A TLC car.
Okay. All right. Yeah. But it, you know, it's interesting because I had a caller last week who was an Uber driver who said that she found bicyclists to be reckless and they scared her and all of this. You feel differently?
I feel differently. I feel like we have the bike lane, the bus lane for a good reason.
Yeah.
So that those congestion of cars and traffic that's there to to slow it down and, you know, to share the lanes with all kind of, like, you know, people. If a taxi driver is saying they are scared, they're lying. They are the main problem.
Wow. Okay. All right. Thank you so much for that call. I really appreciate that. It's really fascinating to hear from people who drive for a living.
Right.
And this is sort of an amazing...
They've got more hours than any other driver.
Yeah. And like, it's amazing to hear that.
They're technically the experts, like, when it comes to, like, experience in a car. Like, they're in a car 8 to 10 hours a day. Like,
absolutely.
They see it all.
Okay, so I just want to remind everyone the studio number to call into is 212-209-2877. We're talking to Courtney Williams, bicycle advocate. And in light of the last caller, who was a TLC driver.
Yes.
So one interesting thing as a bicyclist is that when we encounter harassment, or even if we witness something that was maybe done illegally on the part of a driver, mm-hmm. We have very little recourse because in practice, the NYPD generally has to witness a violation if they're going to do anything about it. And even then, whether they do anything about it or not is up in the air. So last Thursday, you took part in a really interesting forum.
Yes.
And can you tell us more about that?
Okay, so I'm trying to, all the hashtags are flying past my eyes. So there is a collective of tech inclined individuals. I hope I'm not misstating it to say that Noel Hidalgo is the organizer of Beta Talks.
Beta Talks.
Okay. So they had a civic night where they were highlighting Bike NYC, bike culture in New York City, and the technology that supports cyclists and reporting and basically being safer in the city. So there are some lightning talks from individuals who have apps that are designed to help cyclists report when there's a violation that they encounter. So How's My Driving is a bot that Brian Howland created, and you can take a picture and you can put in the the license plate and the state of a car that you see doing something wrong, whether it be double park, whether it be speed and acting crazy, whatever, and the bot will report back to you how many violations that car has. And so it's basically aggregating a lot of information, even though it does not directly report to like NYPD or anything. What we do see when we use apps like this and report it, which fills out 311 applications in an expedited manner for you, is that we get to see the data on who the violators are, and it also just shows you how profound the amount of violations drivers that are on the road have. Like, someone put in a license plate and it came back with like 7 speed camera violations, 2 moving violations, all these things. You're just like, half of the world of drivers right now on New York City streets are repeat offenders, like deep offenders. And that goes toward why we have such a crazy amount of things happening on the streets, because they're not being enforced upon. They're not being punished. And so they just live these kind of reckless lives, hoping that they don't run into a cyclist. So sort of what our last caller said about when drivers of cars say that they are afraid of cyclists. They're not afraid of cyclists. They're afraid of the consequences of finally getting caught when they actually have a physical conflict with a cyclist.
Right, right. So I want to remind everybody again, 212-209-2877. We're talking to Courtney Williams. How's my driving, the Twitter bot you just mentioned? Mm-hmm. You can access that on Twitter.
Yes,
at How's My Driving NY, or you can go on the web. And I just want to, you know, reiterate some of what Courtney said. How's My Driving is fascinating.
It's scary.
If you're plugged into, if you're a bicyclist in New York and you're plugged into bike Twitter and you see, first of all, I want to let anybody out there who's driving know, if you're parked in the bike lane, people are taking your license plate. Okay, here's what's happening on Twitter now. If you're parked in the middle of the bike lane, someone's coming along on a bike. They're taking a picture of your license plate. They are then querying the How's My Driving Twitter bot, which immediately comes back with all your tickets, not your moving violations, but it immediately queries the New York City open data portal. And we cyclists see all your tickets. And as Courtney pointed out, I mean, you really see, like, if you get passed too closely by an aggressive driver and plug those...
Like the FedEx truck that almost hit me on the way here.
Oh, on the way.
He's driving like he had a Corvette. I'm like, dude, it's a FedEx truck.
Yeah.
It's a truck.
Yeah. Yeah, and so we put those in. We see all the speed camera violations. So you know, in a lot of ways, the New York City bike community is doing what the city isn't, or at least not what they're not telling us they're doing. We're cataloging this stuff, and
our day will come when we get to use all this information. You just wait. That's what we're aggregating the data for.
Well, we have a bill in the city council. Brad Lander, council person, yes. Brad Lander has a bill which would use that data to, if you do have go over a certain threshold of red light cameras or speed cameras, that there would be consequences. Your car could get booted. You could have to take a course and all of that stuff. I just want to remind you, 212-209-2877. WBAI, you're on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hi, this is Leroy from Brooklyn.
Hi, Leroy from Brooklyn. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm good.
I picked up on something you said at the outset, and I think it's something that Courtney might be able to speak to as well. You know, the media plays into this notion, a certain media plays into the notion that, you know, it sells newspapers and clicks to demonize bikers, define us as some other group. So, you know, we are told by the New York Post editorial board that we're a tiny minority of bullies. Steve Quatzo's earlier piece had a headline, "If you ride a bicycle, you suck." Marsha Kramer, opposing the Second Avenue bike lane, does a stand-up piece saying, "Oh, good dear Lord, what if the biker going by the Israeli embassy on Second Avenue has a bomb?"
That was a classic. Bombers. Yeah.
Dorothy Rabinowitz, I don't know what goes through her mind, but she was against city bikes because they would begrime neighborhoods. What does that sound like code for? So, you know, the idea that, you know, if you're on a bike, you're some demonized other has a tradition of keeping certain power structures in place, just like this very wealthy condo board on Central Park West this week attempting to block a bike lane that could have saved Madison Leiden's life on Central Park West. So this stupidity, this fear-mongering, this inaccurate definition of us as some demonic other actually puts our lives at risk. It puts New Yorkers' lives at risk. And so that just brings me to sort of like a larger point. One of the unexpected benefits of riding a bike in New York is that if you're white and privileged, you realize in a way you might not otherwise realize, wow, you really are white and privileged, because on a bike, you check that privilege temporarily and in a very small way, but you do temporarily and minutely check it. The media demonizes you for no good reason other than you're just trying to go about your life and get from point A to point B. You pass a cop, and the best that you can hope for is that they ignore you, because they don't really have your safety at interest. If they pay attention to you, it's to harass you for some reason that has nothing to do with your safety. They will give you a ticket for not having a reflector on your bike in broad daylight. If you're a person of color, they will confiscate your bike for not having a bell. And so one of the unexpected benefits of riding a bike, I think, for everybody, and it's pointed out unconsciously by the haters in the media, is that, you know, in New York, we really are a family. And God knows there are family members who will embarrass you, who you wish you could pick your family, but oh my God, you can't. Good Lord, I wouldn't pick Quatzo, Kramer, or Rabinowitz to be in my family. But, you know, in New York, we're stuck with them. We are stuck with people who have this blind hatred of cycling. And the way you have to figure out going forward is, how do we work this? You know, maybe it's, you know, you just, you know, put the crazy uncle in the chair at Thanksgiving, give him some wine and some turkey, and hope he falls asleep watching football. But, you know, we have to figure out how we are going to work this this large family in New York, because we are all crowded together into one small space. And the sooner we realize that we're all in this together, and I'm not talking about cyclists, because we realize that we're all in this together. You know, the minute you get buzzed by, say, a FedEx truck who thinks he's a Corvette, you know in a way that the FedEx driver doesn't realize that, good Lord, we really are sharing a small space. And so, I don't know, one of the things I've been trying to do is I do use humor. Earlier this week, I came up upon two women in a car in a two-way bike lane along the western side of Queens, just parked near the Board of Ed, like people always do in the bike lane. And I was riding towards them, so I started riding slowly, and I started pretending that I was really, really scared, covering my eyes, covering my mouth, making a wild expression, you know, that I was, you know, just about to, you know, lose my mind out of fear, and then slapping my chest, feigning a heart attack, which at my age is, you know, people actually might think it's happening. They started cracking up, but they got it. And they smiled, they waved, and they moved.
Okay.
You know, so it was successful. Now, you can't do that in every situation.
Oh, no.
But, you know, it's, again, we have to realize that that we're family.
All right.
Courtney, I know I've seen you at some of these vigils, and I just wanted to also say thank you for being there.
Oh, thank you for being there. Solidarity matters.
So, Courtney, do you have any strategies? When you encounters with drivers. So we had a caller earlier who...
I'll be real. I flip off everybody.
You flip off?
I do.
Okay.
I am not Leroy. I am not. I will...
No pantomime heart attacks?
No, because no theater. Here's the thing. It's my life.
Yeah.
And I have one.
Yeah.
All right? And my life is not something that should be taken lightly by anyone. It is not something that's swappable for anyone's convenience. So... I let my adrenaline and my right to let you know, like, this is my life, out, and I am unabashed about it. But actually, Leroy mentioned Central Park West, and that is one of two places I have almost lost my life to get indoors. And I mean, like, oh, it was the week after everything started ticking up. And somebody threw open a taxi door. Like, they were at a red light. The taxi was adjacent to the bike lane, and I was stopping, but I was not there yet, and they threw open the door. And I knew that this was happening because I heard myself scream. I didn't process what I heard myself scream, and I stopped, and I turned around. I was like, did you even look? And they're like, no. And I was like, that's it. You just said you didn't look. You didn't try. And then they had the nerve to, like, go in. So I think it's really great that Leroy... chooses to have the presence of mind to mm-hmm. work through it, because in life, truly, the only thing we do control is how we react to stuff.
Yeah.
But I would like to talk about this concept of otherness that he brought up. And yes, like, it's so very important. Like, otherness, oh, there's so many levels to this, right? So cyclist in a car-driven culture are the other in the transportation realm. And it stops there. And I just do want to address, like, yes, the otherness is just a very small glimmer of, like, the perpetual otherness of actually being of color, right? So there's so many cyclists who are, like, white, and they're whatever, and they're on bikes, and they're like, yeah, they're activists, they're very vocal, and they're just like, it's just like being black. And I'm just like, were you born on this bike? Were you from your mother's womb? We knew that you were going to be on a bike, and then those car people were like, we don't even want you to have that bike, baby. It's not the same thing. I just really want to stress that to everyone who's listening. It's not the same thing. But it does give you some, like you said, temporal awareness of, like, me versus the rest of the world. And it's not that you, the cyclist, are in competition. You're just wanting to exist as is. And I would implore everyone to, when they are riding or when they get off that bike, go ahead and push that concept of otherness into other intersections. Mm-hmm. Like, all right, so that's how I feel about me and my chosen mode of transportation. How might I be useful to other people who have a more constant feeling of otherness? How can I relate to them, right? Because it doesn't matter what the medium is. Otherness is otherness. The otherness exists because someone or something is aggregating power off of something mainstream. I don't know if we find out that literally the car industry is somehow funding all of these negative posts.
They are, or something.
But, you know, otherness only exists because something is benefiting from there being a other to demonize. What exactly that is in New York City, I don't know. I have a strong, I kind of want it to be the truth. You know how, like, when people are demonizing something so bad, it just doesn't make any sense. And yeah, it turns out that, like, I don't know, the commissioner of some agency that doesn't do their job actually has a child. Like, their kitten got run over by a bike, and now, for the rest of their life, they're like, I'm going to screw up every bike thing ever.
I
want there to be an origin story for that evil.
Well, there sort of is in a lot of ways, because in one respect, you go to a community board meeting and everybody there against the bike lane has an anecdote. Like, last one I went to, someone gets up there. My daughter was in the city and she opened her car door and a biker almost hit her. She almost doored a biker, but she thinks it's the opposite.
Right.
So now this mom is going to community board meetings and she doesn't want bikes anywhere. And then you have the de Blasio e-bike crackdown, which was based entirely on one caller's anecdotes to the Brian Lehrer show. And I have to sort of pause us here for a moment just to remind you, you know, Courtney, you said maybe we'll find out the auto industry is behind all this
stuff.
Well, they are, because who's advertising in the Post and all these other, the car industry are advertising.
I just need it to be like Scooby-Doo. Like, I need it to be so concrete that we walk up, there's an envelope exchange, we pull off a mask, and it was like, it was him all along.
Like, I think we could do that. I think we could do that. Top. So, you know, the great thing about WBAI is that you're funding it. So you at least can't accuse WBAI of having being an auto industry shill. So I just want to remind you, we're raising funds here to keep Bike Snob on, keep all the shows you listen to on WBAI on. Please pledge. Go to WBAI.org. Become a WBAI buddy. Okay, help this show out. You could go to Bike Snob. You could become a BAI buddy. If you become a BAI buddy, I will send you a signed copy of my book, The Ultimate Bicycle Owner's Manual. Or you can call the pledge line, 516-620-3602. That's 516-620-3602. Pledge your support to WBAI so we can continue to bring you all of these shows, including bike snob, which is not in thrall to the auto industry or the bicycle industry. We're in thrall only to the truth. And we're here with Courtney Williams, bicycle advocate. 212-209-2877 is the number to call. WBAI, you're on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Is this me? I'm Anthony from Brooklyn. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Anthony?
Hey, Anthony.
Okay, I just want to critique a couple of things. I am a reborn bike rider.
Okay.
I'm 65 years old. I used to bike ride in the 70s. We had to carry your bike up the stairs over the Brooklyn Bridge. Mm. And I was on the community board for 10 years. And full disclosure, I love my green lanes. I love the bike bed, but that was 1 year ago. They used to complain. But I see that I bike ride not for business. I bike ride for pleasure. Mm-hmm. But I also, on the road, I wear a helmet, and I use a whistle. Because I stop people in the street when I see people walking across the street, looking at their phone and not even looking at traffic, and some people are pushing baby carriages, looking at their phone and not crossing. I stop at red lights. And I also drive. Mm-hmm. And I've been driving since 1971, and the car is not the industry. What annoys me the most are the people that are on motorized bicycles that go the opposite way, that go in the bike lane and zoom right by you. You get that feeling. Now, wow, what is this? And that's not being discussed. And to that Uber driver, you have to tell me before I get off the phone where I can take my clothes and send them to, because Uber drivers not only stay in the bike lanes when they pull over,
yeah,
but I also noticed, because as a kid growing up, that TLC, you only saw in a yellow cab. The gypsy cabs that they were called, they didn't have TLCs in that day. So if a car goes by me and it says TLC, I know that's either Uber, Lyft, or whatever other company does the riding. And you know what I notice when I'm on my bike? Those are the people that closest to, so close to you.
Yeah, yeah.
And I got to experience one other thing. When I was a motorist and I was picking up Chinese food, and I opened my door, and I looked twice, and when I opened up the store, a person on a bike hit my car, and mm-hmm. I was devastated. Mm-hmm. Thank God that woman had a helmet on, but what got me the most, this was in Park Slope, okay?
Yeah.
Let me hear the truth, okay? You shouldn't use the word snob on a bike. I respect the road. People around me, she had a paper in her hand, and she might have been reading something while she was running up. But people around me were telling her, don't let him get away with it. Mm-hmm. Take him for what he's got. Mm-hmm. I was an enemy. I opened the door. I did not see her. And she came upon my car. Her bike hit the inside of my car door.
All right.
I was the enemy. So here's my...
Yeah.
So you have to understand that the bicyclists have to work with the car, people that drive cars for a living. But you're not addressing the people that ride those motorized bicycles, because they're doing that for a living. That means they're looking to go from point A to point B as soon as they can and as quick as they can. And if it means going two blocks on the down block when they have to go up, they're doing it. And that's not being addressed, because those are bicycles with motors.
All right.
Bicycles without a motor.
All right.
Thank you.
Courtney, do you have
any? You want my support in the future. Yeah. You want my support. Change your name. Not from bike snob. I'm not a snob.
I use the term ironically, if it helps. I try to be a bike anti-snob, but thank you for that. So Courtney, he touched upon a number of issues, but I think there's one or two of them I would like to sort of address here. The first one, what's your take on e-bikes and delivery riders?
I share Anthony's frustration with any cyclist, be they motorized or other, traditional, whatever we want to call our manual. Yeah, there you go. Analog. Analog bike.
Yeah.
No one likes to be passed too close. No one likes to be encountered with the surprise of somebody going the wrong way. Like, period. Like, it doesn't matter what type of bike it's on. Does it seem worse or more frightening that they're going faster? Absolutely, yes. However, I first and foremost look at the circumstances that put the people on the e-bikes, who are mm-hmm. our food delivery workers. And I think that more needs to be done to protect them so that they can obey the law. And what do I mean by that is that we're looking at the population of people who are the most vulnerable citizens of the city. They're usually much older, recent immigrants who are not able to find jobs regardless of, you know, there's a movie, a documentary that's being produced by a woman who is aligned with the Biking Public Project. And it's about immigrant food delivery cyclists and how, you know, wherever they came from, they might have been doctors and PhDs and all these other things, and they get here and they can only find work as the lowest rung of society. And we need to understand the food industry and the way that it works, because most of these people are being exploited. And so, yes, they are trying to get from point B the fastest, but they're trying to get from point A to B the fastest way, which includes sometimes the wrong way, because if they don't get that, they're not getting any money. They don't get wages. They only get tips. A lot of times their tips are stolen. Either they're mugged, either their bosses aren't giving them enough money. So they have a stronger impetus to do what they absolutely have to do. This is a survival thing. So in that, I implore us to use empathy first and try to help them solve their problem instead of vilify them just for who and what they have to do. That also being said, going back to education, right?
Yeah.
So from September to the end of the fiscal year for the city, which is June 30th, I was working as a contractor for the DOT doing bicycle education. So I have a list of classes of my own curriculum that I've made. And there's one called Urban Road School. And Urban Road School is, if you never take another class in your life on bicycling, bicycle navigation in the city, these are the things I think you need to know to survive, to do the right thing, but also to look forward and anticipate what could happen on the street and get around those situations. And one of the things that I insisted that the DOT make possible or put funding in for was that I had interpreters, because one, people don't go to bicycle education of their own volition most of the time unless they're absolutely nervous and they know they're scared. Because adults are like, oh, you know, I can ride. I can literally propel myself and that's good enough. No, it's not good enough. But the education that is available from the existing organizations is primarily only in English. And I'm like, we know who we're working with. We know who has the greatest amount of problems. We know who people are complaining about. Why aren't we making more bicycle education accessible language-wise, right? So I was able to provide all of my classes and all of my rides in Spanish with the assistance of other cyclists who are native speakers. What I would like to do is be able to get into Asian languages, Chinese. Things that you find out when you try to interpret is that there are so many dialects. Even when it comes to South American countries now, there are some organizations that are having problems because there's so many smaller indigenous languages that are coming. But, you know, the will to do the best and the will to provide answers for each other instead of just being upset that someone is not doing what you would do is the key to making it better.
Yeah. This is fascinating to me that, and the number to call is 212-209-2877, Courtney Williams, Bicycle Advocate. How much effort it requires to bridge these gaps. You were saying you are working with the DOT as a contractor. You have to tell them, look, we need to communicate in more languages. There's so many languages,
so many
different ways of communicating, so many different groups in this city, and but the message sort of you want to bring to everybody is the same. So it's just a fascinating thing to me. It's fascinating to me that you're doing this. And it's also, you know, it's amazing that you're doing this. And at the same time, it sort of underscores how many more people, how much more we need.
Yeah.
You know, you're only
it's
one
so
woman.
Funny. I am one woman.
Yeah.
It's so crazy. You know, the city is not for lack of resources. It's one of those things when it comes to government, just like how people process government works. Like, the resources are there, but does it get utilized to its fullness or in a timely manner is always one of those hang-ups. But I think a bigger critique, because we know how government works, we know that there will be lag. One of my bigger critique is how mainstream bicycle advocacy has been working for the longest, right? Mm-hmm. We've had a cruise of, you know, whites. Cycling is predominantly white, or it has been predominantly white, for many historical reasons, including purposeful exclusion of people of color from cycling as a sport, just like golf clubs mm-hmm. or anything else, right? And that affected who inherited this legacy and love of cycling, who inherited the knowledge of what cycling can do for you as a community, community building, environmentally, and all that stuff. So that's why there is such disparity as there is, in addition to the lack of adequate bicycle facilities for safety, like in East New York and Brownsville, where I do a lot of work. But people just need to try harder. Like I said, the cyclists right now, mainstream cycling, still very white. It's just like, oh, I'm an other in this transportation world. Woe is me. Like, yes, woe is us, because we are dying. But they don't extend themselves beyond their neighborhoods most of the time, right? Mm-hmm. Upper West Side cyclist wants to be an Upper West Side cyclist. Mm-hmm. They want their little fiefdom to be safe for mm-hmm. themselves, you know? What number was he? My goodness, at this point, I don't even know. The numbers are all mixed together. Ernest Askew was a cyclist who was killed in East New York, in Brownsville. And we had a vigil for him, and I spearheaded that vigil, along with, of course, there were, because great minds work together, so like the borough president's office, the Brooklyn Organizer for Transportation Alternatives all supported me in making sure that vigil happened. And I didn't want to do that vigil at all. Me and the way I personally choose to relate to death is the way I do things personally. And it felt wild and it felt crazy, but I knew that if I didn't go to, you know, East Brooklyn and say, we're going to have a visual here where you don't cycle for a person who is just like the rest of you, mm-hmm. who needed the same protections that the rest of you want, then nobody else would do it. And so I went out and I organized that vigil, and we put up the plaque, and my messaging around it was like, you say that you care about these issues. This issue carried over to another person who doesn't look like you, who might not ride like you. We didn't even have pictures of who Ernest was. We didn't know anything about him other than he was a cyclist. And I said, you have to come out because we are a bike family. And people did come. And I was so grateful. But that, I hope, you know, nobody wants to die and nobody wants their family member to be dead, but I am thankful for Ernest's life and what it led to, because it's a jumping off point. I think it's a spark that people can remember that this year that happened, and this year I came from somewhere that is far flung, and I went to somewhere that I don't know, that I was told not to go, that I told is a bad place, and I was there. And that's what I hope continues.
All right. Yeah, well, we're one city. We're all riding in one big city, and it needs to be interconnected, and everybody needs to benefit from this infrastructure. I'm going to take one more call. WBAI, you're on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Catherine.
Hi, Catherine.
Hi, Catherine.
I'm calling from Manhattan.
Okay.
I love New York, but I am very disturbed by the quality of the air and how many cars with only one driver mm-hmm. go around the streets. And some years ago in London, they changed the law. Cars coming into London, it was choking, it was foggy, were not allowed in with only one passenger. And the air improved immensely after some months, and the deaths from bicycles being run down also became much lower. I'm wondering if there couldn't be, it has to be a two-way thing. You can't just expect bicycles to do all the work when you've got drivers who have a lot of testosterone and want to get there faster. And I was wondering if there was something to a law that could also clean the air, which would be a rule that bicycles coming from out of town, or indeed even town, had to have more than one person, I mean a driver and at least one or two people in the car.
Yes.
And that helped the bicyclists.
Yes, thank you very much for this call. I think our caller, Catherine, will be very pleased to know that we're moving towards congestion pricing in New York, which is what she's describing, which I don't think will have a limit in the number of passengers in a car, unfortunately, but will impose a toll on vehicles entering the central business district of Manhattan. And yes, the hope is that not only does that create revenue and reduce frivolous driving into the city, but it also makes the street safer. So yes, in answer to your question, you'll be very pleased to know that is something that's happening. I'm not sure how much I trust the city and the state not to carve out a whole bunch of exemptions for people. The police already want exemptions. Everybody wants exemption. We're going to wind it down in a bit, but before I do, Courtney Williams, the Brown Bike Girl, is my guest today, and I want her to tell us what she's doing, what do you have coming up, events you have coming up, how to reach you, all of this stuff.
So August for me means Bike East. Bike East is the annual bike tour of East New York and Brownsville, those areas where it's like, oh no, don't go to East New York and Brownsville. Like, yeah, come to East New York and Brownsville, we're fine. So what happens, this is a 20-mile bike tour. We go as a big bike family out, and it's a chill bike tour. It's like ride, chill, ride some more, eat, come back, have a party. So it leaves from Linden Park on August the 17th at 9 a.m. That is the time that we roll out. We will go to Floyd Bennett Field this year. The goal is to encourage people to recognize all the awesome amenities that are right there in their backyard outside of East New York. So we'll be on the Belt Parkway a lot of the time. And also the big push, because I just try to cultivate bike culture, is to know, like, community activities will be happening where we can plot out bike lanes together, share knowledge, get trained in civics, and promote more cycling in general.
All right. This has been Bike Snob, WBAI. Thank you so much to my guest, Courtney Williams, the Brown Bike Girl. Go to her website, go to her Twitter, go to her Facebook, see what's going on.
And the Instagram.
And Instagram. And become a BAI supporter, WBAI.org. Ride safe out there. Thanks very much for listening.
Thank you.
WBAI New York, Bike Snob with Evan Weiss, Mondays at 10 a.m. Thank you so very much for tuning in. Coming up in a moment, Living for the City.
Hi, my name is Zhonghua Song. I often have my radio turned to 99.5 FM WBAI. When I travel to Seoul, Korea, I listen on the web at wbai.org. 안녕하세요. 제 이름은 송정화입니다. 저는 99.